This is Robin Maynard, and we are speaking with Jessica Yee, who is from the Mohawk Nation, and she is the Executive Director of the Native Youth Sexual Health Network. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Hello, thanks for having me.
All right, so my first question is a bit of a long one. It's about trafficking and Indigenous women in Canada. Although due to the history of colonialism and the historical abuse and exploitation of Indigenous women in Canada, the word trafficking to describe this is actually relatively new. Anti-trafficking has been critiqued by many, including several people on this show, as actually taking away rights and mobility and choices away from migrant women. What we call Canada is actually Indigenous territory, so applying the term trafficking, which often applies to the crossing of borders, is not the case here. This is because, according to a report which actually came out a couple of years ago, there are two different definitions of trafficking which can be applied. One of them is the UN definition, which requires movement. I'll just read the definition for you here. It's the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, or receipt of persons by means of the threat or use of force or other forms of coercion, abduction, or fraud or deception, of the abuse of power or position of vulnerability, or of the giving or receiving of payments or benefits to achieve the consent of a person having control over another person for the purpose of exploitation. Exploitation shall include, at a minimum, the exploitation of the prostitution of others or other forms of sexual exploitation, forced labor, or services. Canadian law, though, actually doesn't require any kind of movement. A person in Canada can traffic someone simply by exerting control over their movements. The criminal code also more narrowly defines the term exploitation than the protocol by requiring that the victim has to believe that their safety is in jeopardy if they refuse to comply with the trafficker's request. So it's important to acknowledge that Indigenous women in Canada have, throughout a legacy of colonialism and racism, been subject to much exploitation and abuse, whether this has been directly perpetrated by the government or aided due to the negligence of the Canadian government. So this is a question in two parts. Could you speak about the situation faced by Indigenous women at this time in terms of actual forced labor exploitation? And also, importantly, I'd like to ask you, how do you feel about the use of the term trafficking to describe this?
Wow, so all good stuff. Very, very good questions. So I guess firstly on the situation faced by Indigenous women at this time in terms of actual forced labor and exploitation, I mean, and even to answer both the question about trafficking, I think that these words and terminologies and definitions are really interesting to work with because they are so often created by systems and institutions that we don't subscribe to, but meanwhile we argue with one another in the activist world about which words to use and which labels. Think, what do we condone, what do we think is okay and not okay? So I always think it's interesting when we come together and have to use those labels and those terms because I don't really feel like they're going to do any justice to what I'm going to say about this entire issue of Indigenous women and what would be seen as trafficking or et cetera. So I think it's important for me as a disclosure to say that I think we need to start looking at different ways that we don't want to compartmentalize ourselves in trying to answer these definitions of things. The situation faced by Indigenous women in terms of labor and exploitation, I mean, we're talking about 500 years of that situation happening. And so what I think is interesting right now in the media that's happening is that this seems to be a revelation all of a sudden, that all of a sudden there are missing and murdered Aboriginal women, that all of a sudden Aboriginal young girls under the age of 18 are 8 times more likely to experience sexual assault than any other race of women in Canada. Like, those types of things, I find it really interesting that the media is all of a sudden talking about this and also to criticize other groups and other alternative media, that seems to be a priority for them all of a sudden. Because if you were to ask any Indigenous, Aboriginal, or First Nations, Inuit, Métis woman or person whether or not women being displaced from communities and beaten out of positions of power and political significance is new. It's not. And so it's certainly like the issue is continuing. And I think that the racialization of the way that women are valued in society, both in Aboriginal society and non-Aboriginal society, is a really good way to look at it. So, I mean, and we're talking about labor and exploitation. There's a normalization of violence that has been committed against Aboriginal women. So whether we're talking about on the street or in a mansion, I mean, this sort of normalization that Aboriginal women are lesser than, Indigenous women are lesser than, and that it's sort of a normalcy for us to experience these types of things is something we've internalized ourselves and something that's mirrored in society. So, I mean, I could talk very extensively about the types of forced labor and exploitation that Aboriginal women are going through, which is no different than other racialized communities and other women really across the world. I mean, women shoulder a burden of so much labor and things that don't get acknowledged or reported. And I think that's an important thing to remember, is that even if I talked about the types of forced labor and exploitation, they're not exclusionary, but they're also what gets reported. There's a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't get reported that the media doesn't want to focus on or look at. And so, like, when we're kind of talking about trafficking, people have conflated the word. People conflate the word so much with sex work that it is polarizing for actual women who are involved in sex work and the sex trade to get services or to have their human rights respected. People throw the word around like they know what it means. And beyond the concept of borders, I mean, I come from a border community, beyond the concept of there being having to be a border in order for you to be trafficked and what that really means, I think if we're going to go with that definition that, you know, if you were to be trafficked, you would have had to have crossed a border. If we're going to focus our attention there, that also means that people who are legitimately being trafficked for whatever reason, and also, you know, reminding ourselves that this whole thing about sexual slavery and forced exploitation of sexual acts is not... comparatively speaking to the other forced labor that exists, is just something that's really salacious. People seem to really buy into it because sex sells. And we're the same people who think that sex is so taboo to talk about are also the first to, like, champion the fact that this is, like, the number one thing about forced labor that's happening when it's not. So even back to my point about even if we were to go with the definition about borders and trafficking, I mean, it does mean that people who are legitimately being trafficked against their will or brought to places against their will aren't being met because we're so busy focusing our attention on arresting women, on raiding massage parlors, and in the name of trying to be righteous and save women, quote unquote, which, you know, has never worked ever, to save quote unquote women, it also means that, like, we're further colonizing women's bodies, women's spaces, and women's choices to engage in the things that they want to engage in or the things that they feel at the time that they want to engage in. I think that the term trafficking, the way that it's used within Canada, also doesn't speak to the reality that Aboriginal women face in our own communities. And there's a whole bunch of internalized oppression and lateral violence that's going on that people are not privy to recognize. That as an Aboriginal woman, I do see that. So I don't know if that all made sense, but
yeah, that actually leads really well into.
It is to say that I don't think it's helpful. I think it's helpful to know that, yes, forced labor and exploitation is absolutely a huge reality for Aboriginal women, but it's not a new thing. It happens in many different forms. And I also think that it's important to note that as an Aboriginal woman, I don't think I'm less likely to be sexually assaulted whether I worked in an office or whether I worked on the street. I feel like there's an equal chance that I'm going to be assaulted, maligned, subject to violence, and there is an extra equal chance that the government, the police, will not be helping me.
Okay, that actually leads into my next question. As both the director of the Native Youth Sexual Health Network and someone who is not anti-sex work, could you talk about the effects from your perspective that the anti-trafficking movement affects Indigenous women who actually do sex work in terms of their ability to control their own lives? And also, what is your take on the way the government tries to present anti-trafficking as women's rights?
Well, something that's really related to this question. One of the things I recently heard from good old Brad Trost, conservative MP in Saskatoon, in his attempt to defund the Canadian Federation of Sexual Health and the International Planned Parenthood Fund more generally, because they perform abortions and support sex work as a human right. He said that he's trying to make those laws illegal because he really cares about women, and he's concerned with how men are attacking women, therefore forcing them to use sex work as a means of employment and perform and have abortions. So I think that the fact that this has been so prolific, both from the government trying to take this up and in the media, means that the right is trying to coerce what they think is best for us and kind of feed it back to us and say, well, look, we're going to try and buy into your sort of theory about human rights in sex work or labor rights as in sex work. And then, but we really want to just displace you and take you away from having those types of rights, you know, in order to save you. So, as I said in the previous question, I think that the whole focus on trafficking and exploitation is just people's ignorance of the realities of sex work. I'd also argue that a lot of the campaigns that do exist that conflate it aren't actually for, like, by current sex workers themselves. There's a whole bunch of re-victimizing that repeatedly happens in these types of campaigns. And in Toronto, actually, we're really lucky. We have partnered at the Native Youth Sexual Health Network to have the first harm reduction pro-choice, and I say pro-choice in that we respect women's choices to engage in sex work, project called the Aboriginal Sex Work Education Outreach Project with Maggie's in Toronto. And it's actually the first project in Canada driven by and for Aboriginal women that isn't exit strategy focused, that doesn't solely look at telling women to get out of the trade. And as somebody myself who has engaged in sex work for the years, and I would always say I'm current or not, because depending if I have clients or not, that I know that that's not working. That's clearly not working with all of the projects and the programs that do exist. I think the way that the government tries to present anti-trafficking as women's rights is dangerous. And I think it's really important for people to not just stand up against it, but to really challenge the government, the authorities, the systems and institutions to define in actuality what they mean by that. So, and to give you an example, if we take a look at the way that the West's anti-trafficking stance is affecting other Indigenous women throughout the world. So MTV has this campaign called MTV Exit, and they teamed up with UNAIDS to basically go into countries where they think that there is a whole lot of sex trafficking, quote unquote, happening, and try and rescue women. And what the effects of that are is, in actuality, Indigenous women in these countries being arrested on suspicion of either being sex workers, of either being positive for HIV, and a whole bunch of stuff that is maligning their human rights because of this Western imposition on anti-trafficking in the name of trying to rescue women. So not only is that having like an internal effect on Canada's, that, you know, Indigenous women and not really meeting them where they're at, but we're also responsible for this kind of stuff that's happening throughout the world to other Indigenous countries and peoples. And I think that's really, really critical for people to remember, is we copycat legislation in Canada. I mean, we live right next door to the United States, so I don't believe in the border, but I also see that Canada as a colonial state copies conservative legislature that it sees in the United States all the time. So it's not just about us in Canada and what we're doing to not to try and save our women. It's also about our actions in other parts of the world.
Obviously, it's extremely important to fight against the reality of this, like, ongoing, which, as you've put it, is something that's not new, but historically ongoing exploitation of Indigenous women. And however, as many on the show today, including yourself, have pointed out, criminalizing sex work is not a solution to this. So what is a more meaningful way to struggle for justice from your perspective?
I'm always interested in looking at things more of as a way of life rather than a movement, because I really feel like movements come and go. I also think that there is we need to get a little bit more solidarity within the sex worker movement if we're going to really challenge the ongoing forces of trafficking, quote unquote. I guess a more meaningful way to struggle for justice is to, if you want to work in solidarity with sex workers, work with actual sex workers. Work with people who are currently engaged in the work and lead it. And that's like any other allyship movement. And I'm not sure why sex work would be any different, because there's a whole lot of people who aren't engaged in the trade who are speaking for it. And we've seen the negative effects of that in so many other communities. So why would sex work be any different? And I think that's partially why we have these outrageous claims about conflating trafficking and people's, you know, I think behind the reluctance of coming to terms of what was really trafficking, what is really exploitation, is people's great unwillingness to really talk about sex and sexuality more generally. People don't want to have elongated discussions to really break it down and deconstruct it, because it's a lot easier to kind of blanket statement it and put it all in the same pot. So a more meaningful way would be to have frank discussions about labor rights, about sex work, but about sex and sexuality more generally, particularly in Indigenous communities where it is that much more taboo, because colonization is still such a very real presence for us. And if you're going to take away if you're going to take away a people's most powerful ability, you're going to take away their sexuality, which is why I think we have members of our own communities conflating trafficking and kind of putting everything under the umbrella of it's bad for women, because we're in survival mode of trying to keep our communities together, keep our communities free of violence, because ain't nobody helping us. And if nobody's helping us or nobody's really caring about that, then we do get left to our own terms and our own measures to deal with things. But it doesn't always mean that we're in the healthiest place to do that, and it doesn't mean that we necessarily have the resources in which to conceptualize this. I get a lot of questions from people about the question about youth and sexual exploitation, because as young people, there's even in the sex worker movement, there's this question about, do young people really have the right to engage in sex work, and does the same human rights framework apply to them? And what I would recommend people to check out is the Young Women's Empowerment Project in Chicago, which is the only organization for young women engaged in sex work between the ages of 13 and 24. And we work with them quite a bit in the United States. And they just produced this amazing research report that they did on exactly what this question is, what's a more meaningful way to struggle for justice for them, which was to listen to them, listen to the source and shut up a little bit more. And I guess that would be my answer to the question, is people need to shut up and they need to listen. And they need to recognize that there are so many spaces that aren't safe for us as sex workers to be real and frank about all of these things. And so respect the ways in which we might decide to organize. But in the meantime, you can correct people on what trafficking really constitutes, what exploitation really constitutes, but more importantly, what self-determination constitutes, not just over land, but over your own body.
Okay, thank you so much for, I feel like you answered these questions really well. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we finish up?
No, actually, the only thing I would add is in this ongoing thing about the Olympics and people seeing all sorts of stuff about women being trafficked here more to engage in sex work, et cetera, that it isn't, it's a little bit, I think it's important to be really careful of the information that you're receiving about that, and to know that very plainly, when a lot of people get together, a lot of sex happens, and that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which event that is, whether it's the Olympics or whether it's a graduation ceremony. So I think it's important to keep it real, if you will, about those types of things coming out.
All right. Thanks so much for being on the show.